It's time for Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Folks, this is Luke, and thank you very much for joining me today. In this segment, my guest is Mr. Brandon Wilner. Now, Brandon is an expert in pond management. That's what he does. He owns and manages UFish Texas. The website is ufishtexas.com. But we're going to talk about, chances are real good, a lot of you folks listening to me have ponds or fish on ponds on your hunting lease or whatever. You don't always fish big lakes, you fish ponds. And I bet we can learn some things from Brandon about stocking the ponds and, you know, keeping them where they're a good fishery. Brandon, thank you, buddy, for being with us today.
Not a problem. Glad you asked me to.
Well, I know that you know a lot of things that a lot of us could benefit from, you know. But basically, what you do is you go in with ponds that, you know, a pond can be 20, 30, 40 years old, and at one time it might have been a real good fishery, but you were telling me off the air some of what you do is go into these ponds and dig them out and clean them out and get the right habitat on in there and then restock them, right?
You know, that's what we've gotten to on so many ponds out in Northeast Texas where we hang out all the time. A lot of people buy property, changes hands, and nobody really knows when the pond started. We have a lot of Corps of Engineer lakes, you know, that were done for water management, erosion management, things like that, that were done 50 years ago. And so we have these customers. Now, you mentioned me being an expert. Everybody's an expert in different things. We just happen to play the game a little different than some people. So there's a lot that I don't know, and every single pond is different. That's important. That's the first thing we have to start everything with. But a big thing we're dealing with now in the last few years is just outrageous weed and algae growth in ponds. And so we get phone calls. Everybody wants to call and say, hey, what fish will eat my weeds? And you have fish that will eat weeds, and you have fish that will eat algae. But so often we go out to these ponds, and you could put as many fish as you wanted in these ponds, and you're not gonna get them to eat the thousands of pounds of vegetation these ponds are producing, because they are so fertile in the bottom, because they have so much organic matter built up.
Okay, but now that is one way to I'm assuming this, but it's one way to attack the wild growth of vegetation, you know, it is a problem. It's a problem on ponds that I fish all the time. Sometimes they just get choked out, you know. Now, using fish to plant-eating fish, is that a viable thing, Brandon? I mean, can they control it if you have the right fish and the right numbers, you know?
It can be used for maintenance. I wouldn't recommend it for anything beyond maintenance. If you're trying to maintain a pond, you can use the Mozambique tilapia. They're legal in the state of Texas. You can use those fish to control algae growth, things that are free-floating in the pond generally. But look at it as if it floats on the surface and moves around, filamentous algae, things like that. They will prefer things like that. Duckweed, a lot of people want to use them for duckweed. And we have mixed results. And just water quality. Sometimes the duckweed will outrun the tilapia. You can't get enough in there. Anything that's growing up from the bottom, the tilapia are not an actual plant. They're not the best alternative for that, not even really a good alternative for that. And that's where you get into the triploid grass carp. And you have to get permits from Parks and Wildlife to get those fish. And you have a permit per fish, and we fill that permit for you. So we are an exotic species handler and transporter, so we can get those fish for people in the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. But if you have a pond, if you've gone out and you've seen ponds that are just producing, you know, you've got good bluegill populations, but you just can't throw a bait anywhere without it getting hung up. If your pond is already at that point, you can't expect to put these grass carp in there and say, all right, you're a vacuum cleaner, eat everything that's in this pond. You have thousands and thousands of pounds of organic matter in this pond. And you just can't beg that fish to eat enough of it. He'll eat as much as he can. That would do real well in the springtime if they're already in the pond, maintaining the pond. So consider them a maintenance tool, but not a fix-all tool. and you will have some ponds, older ponds, real fertile ponds, that it doesn't matter what you've got in there, how much you spend on chemicals, what fish you put in that pond, for some reason you just keep finding, you know, every year in May, June, July, my weed growth just gets so out of hand that, you know, by the time this summer's over, there's not a place to fish on the pond. And you're just dealing with a super fertilized situation. You also, you know, you run into that issue at that point where my fish don't seem to be as big as they used to. They don't seem to be as healthy as they used to. And sometimes you're just fighting an uphill battle where the pond is old. It's not in the position to produce what it used to.
Well, would that be a situation, Brandon, where you come in with equipment, you know, I guess, and just, it's not like you're starting from a brand new pond. You've already got it in a watershed that obviously holds water and catches water and everything. But is that where you would go in and drain it maybe? I mean, in some situations, and deepen it out, get all the silt out?
That is exactly right. A lot of people don't see that coming when they first buy a piece of property or something like that, because they're not sure what to expect as a couple years go on. But if you go out and have a pond that you just can't keep under control, that really is what I consider the best alternative. When we get done with a project like that, it's right in the old place. When it's full of water, it looks just like it used to. But in the bottom, you don't have all the sediment that's there. I've done ponds in the last couple of years. We've been in the bottom of ponds that have had 6-7 foot of sediment in the bottom of these ponds. And when I say sediment, that means you could go out and a person with waders could not walk out into these. We put tractors in the bottom and start taking mud and sludge out of the bottom. That is years of this weed that have grown up, died and decayed at the bottom of the pond. Fish that have lived, died and decayed at the bottom of the pond. All of these things, not to mention, you know, silt that washed in, grass shavings that washed in out of hay fields and things like that for years and years. And so you can take a pond that used to be 20 foot deep, and all of a sudden you're like, well, now my pond is 10 foot deep, and in some areas it's 8 foot deep. Well, they fill in. That's part of it. But yeah, we're looking to try and make a new pond. One big plus that you mentioned is the watershed. You know for a fact that you've got the water that moves into that area already. You don't have to sit back and redo the math and say, well, will my pond fill up? You know that it will. You know that you can expect good results. You're just doing a remodel. Just consider it a remodel or renovation is what, you know, the term we use most often.
You bet. Well, that makes a great deal of sense. There's about, I don't know, I'm estimating 20 to 30 acres of water about a mile from my house, Brandon, that's some old gravel pits, you know. And though in summer, into the middle of summer, lily pads take over the up, choke it out on one end. Luckily, you know how gravel pits are usually long, become long ponds is what they do. But the deep end is only, you know, you think of them as being deep, deep, but it usually holds about 10, 11 foot of water, you know, as an average. But the upper end is just literally choked out. But luckily, there's a deep end, and as of yet, that vegetation hasn't choked the lower end out. But I can see it coming, you know. Let's talk about stocking fish just a little bit, Brandon. I know you do that too. You know, you do stock ponds all over, you know. You stay on the road a great deal doing that. Say you want to have a channel catfish. And these little ponds that I'm talking about, I've got a fish feeder and stocked it with channel catfish. It dried up about 4 years ago during the drought, but it came back and it's holds water now fine. So we stocked it with some channel catfish back then. But I don't know. It's just we put 1,000 of them in there, and they dispersed. I don't know. It's been plenty of water. We're not finding them in there. It's kind of wild. I don't know if the bass ate them, you know, or what. There's still channel cat in there, but they're not coming to the feeders like they used to. So if you want to stock your pond with channel catfish, is it best to depend, you know, if it's a smaller pond, just go with catfish, Brandon?
That is ideal. And the reason being is if you're putting a largemouth bass and the catfish in the same pond, you've got two upper-level predators that are in direct competition for food and area. And a huge factor that you just mentioned, the first thing you said, was you're not sure if the bass had eaten them. And a 9-inch bass will eat a 6-inch catfish. So depending on the size of catfish that you restock in there, you can lose a lot of those. I had a customer for years that he had plenty of money to spend on what he was doing, and he ordered catfish for 3 years straight just to put in his pond to watch his bass eat them. It was just that's what he felt like doing. It was what he wanted to do.
Yep.
So we sent him thousands of catfish and watched the bass eat them. He never raised a single catfish. You could feed all that you want. It wasn't going to happen. So you will lose that. Stocking an existing pond is very difficult to stock around what's already in there. If you have 2-pound bass in there, a 4 to 6 inch catfish doesn't stand a real good chance. And you know, a 2-pound bass is not a real big one. But those, the only way that you could expect to get those catfish to be successful, you mentioned having a feeder out there. Have a way that you can feed those fish and try and get them to grow and outgrow what those bass are doing, and make sure that your pond is already healthy when you start, that those bass have plenty of bluegill to eat, and that there's a food source in there other than just, well, we're putting the catfish in there for bait.
A lot of variables to it, isn't it, really? You know, many.
Every pond is different. Yeah. Every single pond you go to, we have ponds that are sit right next to each other, and the only thing that separates them is a big wall of dirt. And one pond will grow fish, you know, 30% faster than another pond, and they're right next to each other. They get the same water put in them. And every pond just has different things happen to them, and they respond differently.
You bet. Well, Brandon, we only have a couple of minutes left. The main thing in my radio shows and my newspaper columns that I've always done for many years, my intent has always been to, for lack of a better term, hook people up. In other words, I know there's probably many of our listeners that are thinking, hey, you know that pond on my place, it needs something. That's what I'm all about as an outdoor writer and radio guy in the last few years. So I want people to know if they've got somebody that can help them with these problems like that. So the website, Brandon, that folks can go to is ufishtexas.com. Is that right?
Yes, the letter U, FISHTX.com, so ufishtx.com.
Okay, and then if they want to, that's the best way, folks, Brandon has told me, just U, the letter, ufishtexas.com. That's the best way to find out about it. But is it good to leave a number? Would you can certainly do that if someone wants to call you, Brandon.
Yeah, we take phone calls all day long, every day. The best number for the office is 903-883-3976. So 903-883-3976.
Okay, good deal. Now, the next time we get you on, we'll talk more about fishing, but you've also got some lakes that are heavily stocked with channel catfish for folks to come and fish. So that's on the website, too, ufishtexas.com. They can certainly learn all about that. Brandon, I really appreciate you sharing the knowledge with us today. I know you've helped some people, and you've enlightened me in some things that I didn't know about. So we'll get you back, and I think it's a lot of folks most folks that listen to our show fish and hunt, so this is right up everybody's alley. I know it's going to help a lot of people. I really appreciate you being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. If anybody's got any questions, send them on.
Folks, this is Luke Clayton, and thank you so much for tuning in to today's show. Remember, you can listen to the archive of our shows at ketr.org. Today's show was made possible by the Dallas Safari Club, Smokin' Tex Electric Smokers, Air Force Air Guns, Darton Archery, Snaplock Hunting Blinds, Pyramid Air, Sightmark, maker of the Photon XT, and Catfish Bubblegum.
Luke Clayton has been addicted to everything outdoors since his childhood. He grew up hunting and fishing in rural Northeast Texas. Luke pens a weekly newspaper column that appears in over 50 newspapers. For videos, archived newspaper articles, and more information, visit catfishradio.com. This has been Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.